Hello, everyone. My name is OJ Tucker, host of the OJ Tucker Podcast, the only comedy tennis podcast that talks about our political and societal culture as a whole. My name is OJ Tucker, as the name would suggest. Happy Tuesday. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed your weekend, spending time with your family, your friends, watching the Eastbourne International. I think that was the last tournament that happened before Wimbledon. I don't think that, maybe not, but this podcast will not be discussing any tennis-related topics. I'm filming this on a Monday, which is the same day that Wimbledon starts, so obviously I will not be discussing any topics for tennis. That will happen later this week and hopefully on my podcast clips channel if I have any chance or time to discuss it. But there are a lot of topics that did happen and a lot of news events that did occur this past weekend that I think is very, very important of your time. Obviously, we can discuss Stavros Halakios leaving Cometown, the most prescient information that came out this past weekend in terms of our political and societal realm. Stavros Halakios leaving Cometown, just my overall thoughts and opinions on him leaving that podcast. We can also discuss the BET Awards that happened yesterday, Sunday night. Obviously, you're hearing this on a Tuesday, so maybe not so much yesterday, but that happened on Sunday night. The BET Awards, my overall thoughts, my overall views, my overall opinions on what happened. We can also discuss Ezra Miller and how the situation with Ezra Miller regarding Ezra Miller is getting worse and worse by the day with what happened on Thursday with news that leaked out that showed that Ezra Miller was housing three children and a mother in a weapon-like farm that transpired on Thursday with news circulating around that. We can also discuss the FDA set to ban Juul and my overall thoughts and opinions on just the government doing more things to regulate people and what they can and cannot do on a day-to-day basis. And obviously, where we're going to start off for today will probably be the most important news, or probably the biggest news in regards to politics in the past month or so, at least, I would say. So if you guys didn't know, if you guys haven't been on social media, which I don't blame you if you haven't, but if you haven't been on social media lately, the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. And this was done on Friday at around like 10 a.m. So they really dumbed this out on like the slowest day for news, and they made it so much so that it essentially became the biggest news story in the world, essentially, because, you know, that's just how the U.S. does it, unfortunately. So let me just get this from the New York Times. After a leak, the Supreme Court details its final decision on abortion. The Supreme Court on Friday overruled Roe v. Wade, eliminating the constitutional right to abortion after almost 50 years to a decision that will transform American life, reshape the nation's politics, and lead to all but total bans on the procedure in about half of the states. The ruling will test the legitimacy of the court and vindicate a decades-long Republican project of installing conservative justices prepared to reject the president, which had been repeatedly reaffirmed by earlier courts. It will also be one of the signal legacies of the President Donald J. Trump, who vowed to name justices who would overrule Roe. All three of his appointees were in the majority in the 6-3 ruling. And that's in that 6-3 ruling. It was like, you know, Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, Alito, Clarence Thomas, and two other people that I don't really have any care to really talk about or have any clue about who they are. I'm sure people know who they are once they come out. But the decision, which echoed a leaked draft opinion published by Politico in early May, will result in a starkly divided country in which abortion is severely restricted or forbidden in many red states, but remains freely available in mostly blue ones. Chief Justice John J.G. Roberts Jr. voted with the majority, but said he would have taken a more measured course, stopped short of overruling Roe. John G. Roberts was obviously the fifth one. There's one more. I don't really care to know his name, but or her name. Stopping short of overruling Roe outright. The court's three liberal members dissented. The case Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, number 19-1392, concerned a law enacted in 2018 by the Republican-dominated Missouri legislature that banned abortions if the probable gestational age of the unborn human was determined to be more than 15 weeks. The statute, a calculated challenge to Roe, included narrow exceptions for medical emergencies or a severe fetal abnormality. So it's important to point this out, but states like Missouri had this trigger law where if a federal law made it so that abortion was illegal, let's say if Roe v. Wade was overturned, then Missouri, the state of Missouri, would ban abortion unless under a medical emergency. So basically, Missouri created this trigger law where now they ban all forms of abortion under extreme use of medical emergency. Now, I don't know if that includes, you know, rape or incest. Maybe so. I'm not so sure. I still have to check out on that. But again, there are trigger laws in several states where if this were to be outright overturned, if Roe v. Wade was to be overturned, then this would cause those states to essentially ban abortion outright. So before I give my thoughts on this, let me just say this. I remember earlier in this podcast, and when I say podcast, I don't mean this episode. I remember early on in this podcast where I did say that I was pro-life, right? There were times in this podcast, you know, back a few months ago, which was a year, where I would say that I was pro-life. Now, I'm here to clarify the comment. When I said that, I only meant it in a way of that it was purely entertaining. Like, I only meant that because I wanted to, like, find how I could make it funny. Like, that's all I meant when I said I was pro-life. I don't actually mean I'm pro-life. To be honest with you, I'm sort of indifferent on this topic. You know, like, for me, there are times where, you know, if a woman gets an abortion, like, in her third trimester, that's murder. If it's, like, you know, if it's, like, in the morning after, I don't really consider that murder. So, for me, like, it's a little difficult for me to discuss the topic because my thoughts on it is that it's, for me, like, I don't think it's of my concern to really discuss it or to really, like, weigh in heavily on the topic, because obviously there are way more educated people on this topic than I am. Obviously I'm not a woman, so that obviously puts a dent in my idea of putting any sort of opinion on the topic. So when I said I was pro-life, you know, a year ago, I only meant it because I wanted to, like, poke fun at the idea of somebody being pro-life. I wanted to, like, sort of make it funny. And I'm still trying to find the funny edge to being pro-life, which I don't know if there could be. But that's what I meant when I meant, that's what I meant when discussing this topic in particular when it comes to abortion and whatnot. So I only meant it in that perspective. It was never meant to be taken literal. So hopefully people understood that. You know, I'm not so sure if people really remember my comments on abortion, but if there are still listeners that did check out those podcast episodes, hopefully this gives them the conclusion of what I truly believe in that. So when I heard this, I for one, was kind of sad. I really am. I really was, because I find it weird that the U.S. government is now the arbiter of what is human life. Right, because if you know the U.S. government, you know that the one thing that they don't care about is human life. When you think of what we've been doing overseas, when you think of the constant imperialism message that we've been sending to individuals overseas, whether it's in Iraq, Afghanistan, even before then with Vietnam, with Korea, with that of, say, World War II, or, I mean, World War II is a different story, but when you think of what we've been doing in terms of drone striking Somalia and whatnot, I feel like it's very weird when you see a government, especially the U.S. government, be the moral arbiter of what can and cannot be done to people. I really think in that perspective, because, like, America does not care about human life. Let's be honest here. Like, America does not care about human life whatsoever. They don't give us healthcare. I mean, that's for damn sure. We don't live in a non-interventionist country. You know, we're always in intervention. We're always in some type of war in some fashion, some way, shape, or form. We're always in some war. So when I see the U.S. government do this and say, no, we got to be pro-life, it sets a weird message. It really does, because I truly don't think that America cares about human life. I really don't at all. I mean, the one thing that I dread when going to social media on Friday and hearing this news information was seeing that George Carlin joke where he's like, once you're on your own 2 feet, you're on your own, something like that. I don't know the words verbatim because I'm not that big of a George Carlin fan. But when I saw that joke, I'm like, yeah, even though I'm not that big of a George Carlin fan, I can admit that he's right. And believe me, that joke of George Carlin saying that, oh, Republicans are anti-women, that was circulating the internet. And understandably so, I get where he's coming from, because again, it just makes no sense to regulate and to tell individuals what they can do with their own bodies when America in and of itself does not care about other people. You know, so I would get them being pro-life, if it also meant being them pro-universal healthcare, if it meant them being pro-non-interventionist, I would get being pro-life in those situations, in those scenarios. But as it currently stands out, let's be honest here, like the average individual that has a child out of wedlock is not ready to financially help out that child. I mean, think about it. We have, you know, Biden's gas prices going through the roof. We have inflation, you know, going more than anything else. We have, you know, less and less of a standard of living, more so than, say, our parents and grandparents. You know, our ability to have home ownership is at an all-time low. So when I see Republicans in general supporting this idea of Roe v. Wade being overturned, it's like, do you not know the precedent that you're setting? You're only making our situations worse, you know? And when you see them not really care about the funding for these children or not really care about adequately helping them, it sort of sets people in a negative perspective in terms of this topic. So I know I sort of went a little overboard with this topic. I know I sort of dug deep in this topic. And, you know, I'm trying to do my best to make this podcast enjoyable and fun. And I feel like this topic does not do that at all. So that's overall my thoughts and opinions on this. I feel like it's kind of sad to see this. It really is, because you think that we would be focusing on more important things. You think that this decision that was made 50 years ago would be set in stone. You know, for me, like, I was for one shocked at this decision, because for me, like, I was a person that thought that Roe v. Wade was as American as apple pie. Like, I really thought that. I really thought Roe v. Wade was ingrained with the Constitution. I really thought it was a part of who we were as people. I just thought it was, like, what we did. You know, so when I see this, it's kind of sad. And when I see the hypocrisy with Republicans in this, I mean, that's just as sad as what I previously stated with Roe v. Wade being American as America, as apple pie. So, I mean, when I see Republicans, they cheer on, you know, this, it's like, you do realize that you're children are also like telling women to be on plan B, right? Like, you do realize that you have some relative out there that has had an abortion. You know, I mean, there was like this news, like there's this tweet, I don't know if it was substantiated or whatnot, but there was this tweet that like apparently like Yvonne, like some person, Lauren Santo Domingo or something, like, I don't know, I think that's her name, maybe not, but apparently like she tweeted out saying that like Ivanka Trump had an abortion when she was in high school, which I'm not going to weigh on that, but I think it's interesting that she herself was pro-life during Trump's presidency. I think it's kind of interesting to see that, but also see that she had an abortion as well. You know, so when I see the hypocrisy of Republicans with that, it's like, yeah, I mean, I feel like for the average poor person, like they're going to have a hard time getting an abortion. They may have to travel across state lines just to get an abortion, but for the average politician who has a mistress that they may knock up, you know, they're completely fine going to a blue state and paying for that abortion. You know, they're completely fine, you know, sending that, you know, mistress overseas to get an abortion while, you know, having this rhetoric that they're pro-life. You know, for them, they don't care. They really don't care at all. They're only doing this because they value the evangelical support of people that care about being pro-life. You know, that may say that they're pro-life, but they don't really care about any sort of interest outside of that in terms of caring and providing for the children that they say they care about. You know, so I feel like that's where I'll sort of leave it at that with that topic. Obviously, like, this is a very sort of sad topic of discussion to like lead off a podcast, but I feel like it's important to at least discuss this because obviously people are, you know, are up in arms about it, which I understand why. I mean, I was surprised to see the lack of protest, by the way. Like, I realize that America really does not, I feel like people are so down and out on America where it's like there, why protest, you know? Like, I feel like a lot of individuals, I mean, there were protests, but I didn't feel like they took it as seriously as I thought they should have. I'm not going to lie. Like, there are people were blowing bubbles outside the Supreme Court over this decision. I'm like, do you really care about this if that's what you're doing, blowing bubbles and singing songs? Apparently, like, the U.S. House of Representatives, like, the Democrats of the House of Representatives just sang a song, America the Beautiful, which I don't know where they are. I don't know if they should get their heads out of their asses, but, I mean, make some legislative decisions so that this doesn't happen again. When you see Barack Obama, like, make a Twitter post about this and then realize, oh, Barack Obama could have easily put in a Democrat justice while he was in office. He could have easily told Ruth Bader Ginsburg to retire and so that he could put in a Supreme Court justice in her place. I mean, let's be honest here. Anyways, that's my thoughts. Those are my thoughts on the situation regarding Roe v. Wade. And that's where I sort of leave it at that. All right. So let's get into our next bit of discussion here. The government is set to ban more things in regards to what we can put in our bodies. So the FDA has announced that they will ban Juul from the market. This is from NPR. FDA orders Juul to pull all of its vaping products from the U.S. market. The Food and Drug Administration has issued a marketing denial order to Juul, telling the company to remove its e-cigarettes from the U.S. marketplace, a decision that promises to shake up the vaping market. The decision applies to all of the products currently marketed in the United States, the FDA said. Citing the FDA's review of Juul, which accounts for a large portion of the U.S. e-cigarette market, FDA Commissioner Robert M. Califf stated, "Recognize these make up a significant part of the available products, and many have played a disproportionate role in the rise in the youth vaping." In response, a Juul representative said the company will fight this decision. "We respectfully disagree with the FDA's findings and decision," Joe Murillo, Juul Labs chief regulatory officer, said in a statement sent to NPR. "We intend to seek a stay and are exploring all of our options under the FDA's regulations and law," Murillo said, "including appealing the decision and engaging with our regulator." All right, so the FDA is set to ban Juul. And if you guys don't know what Juul is, it's basically like the biggest e-cigarette brand there is. Think of Coca-Cola, but for vaping. That's basically what you get from Juul. And before I get into the topic as to what my opinion on this, I'll just say outright, I don't smoke, I don't really drink, I don't really do any drugs. Obviously, tobacco is really bad for you. You know, the idea of nicotine is very, very bad for you. You know, it's bad for your health. You know, you get lung cancer and other sort of things as a result of it, you know, very, very, you know, poor illnesses as a result of having that addiction. And, you know, I think it's very, very important to, you know, stick with a well-balanced diet and whatever that may be, you stick with it, you know, be healthy, be active. You know, that's very, very important. To take care of yourself is very, very important. I sort of want to put that PSA out there, but if I get, you know, striked, if I get, you know, if, you know, YouTube takes on this video, I want to say that's very, very important to say that, you know, it's very, very important to take care of your body. You know, it's very, very important to take care of, you know, your balanced diet each and every day. Now that I said that, I feel like it's not the government's interest to tell people what they can do with their bodies. And I say that not only with the abortion argument, but also with Juul and with cigarettes. Like, yes, Juul and cigarettes, they're not good. I mean, obviously, like, you should, if you have an addiction, you know, you should seek help. You should find ways to sort of mitigate and prevent that from occurring so that you don't have to rely on this each and every day. But again, I don't think that Juul should be banned. Now, again, if there's universal health care, sure, like, obviously, there's going to be some restrictions. You know, if they're going to restrict, you know, the amount of, you know, sugary drinks there are, sure, I get it. I understand that. But there's no universal health care. There's no sort of government oversight on our health. So why are they banning Juul, right? I understand that there are other e-cigarette brands out there that are just as bad as Juul. So why are they banning Juul specifically? Well, they say that it's because they target kids and that they were targeting kids early on. And obviously, like, if they're going to target the marketing, I understand it. I understand where they were, why they may come from that perspective. But to ban it outright, I think that's kind of sad. And I don't think that's the right way to go about this when it comes to this decision, when it comes to this overall mindset. Because again, what are you doing at the end of the day? Like, what is the end result for this? Because at the end of the day, there will still be other e-cigarettes out there. So you're just going to ban e-cigarettes altogether? And you're going to make people hooked up on opioids to help out, you know, big pharma? Is that the end goal for this? Is just to get people hooked on more horrible drugs out there that ultimately benefit the pocket of big pharma? Because if that's your master plan, then, I mean, what are we doing as Americans? Like, what are we doing as America, that at the end of the day, all that really matters and all that really boils down to is just helping out the bottom line for corporations at the end of the day. Like, what is the bottom line? What is the end result for banning Juul? I don't get it. And again, like, I want to reiterate this. I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't do any drugs. I've never had a drug in my life. I've never sipped alcohol in my life. Like, I'm basically straight edge. And I hate to call myself straight edge. I really do, because it is gay to call yourself straight edge. I mean, let's be honest here. Like, if you call yourself straight edge, that's kind of gay. I'm not going to lie. It's quite gay. I only do it because I don't really see the need to do it. I mean, I don't. So I don't even like to drink caffeine, to be honest with you, but that's neither here nor there. That's not important for the discussion. What is important for this discussion is that I don't think the government should tell individuals to do with their bodies. I mean, if we're living in a sort of system that, again, does not care about healthcare, does not care about, you know, supporting needs for individuals, where everything is employer-based, where the only way we can get healthcare is through our employer, which sucks. You know, if we live in a system where they don't really value or seek, you know, any sort of treatment for mental health, or, you know, give individuals the ability to get therapy, you know, I mean, these are like bottom barrel things that the U.S. government should enact for its people if they want to take itself seriously, if they want people to live healthier lives. To ban Juul outright, I mean, that's low-hanging fruit. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of sad. It really is. Again, because there are a lot of individuals that, you know, do use Juul and that do use it responsibly. And, you know, when you see, I mean, there was this interview, I forget who, he was interviewed by some British, you know, journalist, but he was talking about like how he doesn't find smoking out in public to be that much of a nuisance for other people. Because, and this is his words, not mine, but he says that if you really think about what the government has put into our food, I mean, that's way worse than just smoking outside, thinking that other people will get, like, cancer because of you smoking. You know, like, and he sort of puts it in more eloquent ways and more eloquent term. And I want to put a name to the face, but again, like, he was interviewed by this British, journalist, and he was making some rational points about how the idea of banning smoking outside is dumb because of what, of the amount of carcinogens that they put in our food and how they make our food less valuable and less nutritious as a result of it, and how that plays more of a role than just somebody smoking outside. And I feel like he really put it in a way that made me understand his side of things. So again, for them to ban Juul, I think it's kind of sad. I mean, again, the government should not be the moral arbiter as to what people can do with their bodies. It just makes no sense whatsoever. And I don't even say that about, like, Juul. I mean that with other drugs as well. I mean, I really don't see the need for them to outright, you know, decriminalize this. I really don't. So again, you know, that's sort of my thoughts and opinions on the Juul situation, on the FDA banning Juul, and it really doesn't make any sense. I mean, Joe Biden is one of the saddest presidents ever. Like, this is a very sad presidency for Joe Biden. I don't know how he's going to get reelected. I really don't. Maybe Roe v. Wade pushes him or pushes people to vote Democrat. But again, it's not like the legislative branch has a decision or can make a decision on Roe v. Wade. It's all judicial. It's all the Supreme Court. So it's not like voting for a president is going to change anything for abortion. I do think that this will make women in red areas vote blue. Maybe not, you know, Bernie blue. I don't think they'll vote Bernie blue or anything that's left-wing populist. But I do think that this will allow certain women that are in red areas to secretly vote blue. But even then, like, I still think that a lot of women, I don't know if women want to say this, but I do feel like a lot of women secretly are pro-life. Like, I feel like that's very, very important that, like, women understand as well. Like, I know that there are a lot of women out there that are pro-choice, and believe me, like, I live in Massachusetts. It's very pro-choice here. Very, very pro-choice. Understandably so. But I don't feel like women want to acknowledge that they themselves also have a lot of people within their community that are also very pro-life. Like, I mean, maybe not so much as we think there are, but I mean, there's a sizable amount of people that there are that are surprisingly pro-life. So I feel like that often goes, that people don't really mention that or address it. Like, people like to blame men for all of society's ills. And yes, men, we've done a lot of bad things in our life, don't get me wrong, but I feel like, you know, there are a lot of women that are also very pro-life, and I feel like it doesn't matter who, what gender they are. What matters is that at the end of the day, there are thoughts like that that do go in people's minds that are like that. You know I didn't say it in the most glamorous way possible, but just hear me, like, just understand where I'm coming from in that vein. So again, FDA banning Juul, overturning Roe v. Wade, I don't know if that's really beneficial. I really don't. If the FDA banned people from smoking, like from doing vape tricks, I would be in support of that. If the FDA was like, you know what, we'll ban people from blowing clouds of smoke from one cloud to the other cloud, making the cloud smaller. If the FDA banned that, I would be like, you know what, FDA, I get you. It's a nuisance. It's disgusting. It's disturbing. Ban vape tricks. Don't ban vaping. Don't ban Juul. Ban vape tricks. That's what I think the FDA should ban. Anyways, I think that's where I'll sort of leave it off at that. All right, let's get into our next bit of discussion here, shall we? So Ezra Miller, the situation with Ezra Miller just keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. This is from page 6. So let's just get right into it. So Ezra Miller has been allegedly housing 3 children and their mother at a weapon-filled farm. It sounds pretty bad, I'm not going to lie. I read into it, I'm like, this is a little bit more complicated than what is being reported on. But when I saw, like, actual outlets, like the trades, go after Ezra Miller, I'm like, okay, this might be pretty bad. But again, when I read into it, I'm like, it is bad still. It's still kind of bad. But I mean, after hearing it, I'm like, okay, this is, I don't know. I'll just leave it at that. But again, I'm just reading this from page 6. So Ezra Miller is allegedly housing a young mother and her 3 small children at a Vermont farm, which is allegedly littered with firearms, ammunition, and marijuana. Multiple sources with knowledge of the situation, including the children's father, made the accusations to Rolling Stone in an expose published Thursday. 2 of the sources expressed concern for the safety of the children, age 1 to 5, alleging that there are unattended guns strewn around the room, which lies on the Fantastic Beast Star's 96-acre property in Stamford, Vermont. The Rolling Stone claims to have reviewed video footage from April that appeared to show at least 8 assault weapons, rifles, and handguns scattered around the home's living room, noting some weapons were even propped up next to stuffed animals. One source added that the 1-year-old once allegedly picked up a loose bullet and put it in her mouth. Okay, what I said about it's not as bad as what I thought it would be, scratch that. I mean, it's been quite some time. It's been like 3-4 days since I read the article again, but after reading it, okay, it's kind of bad. I'm not going to lie. I went to New Jersey over the weekend, so I'm a little bit out of it, a little bit in vacation mode. Maybe, I don't know if you would consider going to New Jersey vacation, but anyways, let's get right into it. I'll read the article again. So additionally, both sources allege that there is frequent and heavy marijuana use in front of their children. The outlet reports that there is a sizable cannabis farm on Miller's property, which is not among the state's 25 licensed cultivators. Apparently, you must have like a weed farm or weed dispensary or whatnot to have cannabis, and Miller didn't have that. According to the publication, the 25-year-old woman and her children have been living on the Perks of Being a Wallflower Star's property since mid-April, having met in Hilo, Hawaii, the month prior. However, the mother insists that she and her children are not in danger. In fact, she told the outlet that Miller helped her escape from an allegedly violent and abusive ex and gave her a safe environment to her 3 very young children. According to Rolling Stone, the mother pursued a domestic abuse case and a paternity case against the father of her children in Hawaii last May, but the former was dropped when both parents failed to appear in court. The father denies all abuse allegations. All right, so the mom is saying that, you know, she's suffering through abuse because of the father, and, you know, she sought refuge through Ezra Miller, which is very sort of Jesus-like imagery for Ezra Miller. I don't know. If you're going through domestic abuse violence, I don't think the first person you go to is some Hollywood star that is vacationing in Hawaii. I'm not the smartest person in the world, but if you're seeking refuge through a Hollywood star, then you must be going through some personal stuff. Like, you must be going through some bad crap if you are seeking refuge through some attention-seeking Hollywood star that, you know, changed their pronouns to they, them. So that's where I'll sort of leave it off at, the domestic abuse situation. But with Ezra Miller, I mean, they is weird. They is very, very weird. I think this is one of those situations where we're going to look back at them in the next few years and be like, this person was a genuine psycho. Like, I'm getting genuine psycho vibes from them. I really am. And when I see this, it's kind of sad. It really is. I'm not going to lie. When I saw this sort of situation play out, and when you see them get into a lot of sort of altercations with the police, with the locals of Hawaii, and when you see how they is going through all of this, it's kind of weird. It really is. And it's not good. It's not something that a studio should want to be invested in. If I'm Warner Brothers, I'm dropping them from the platform. I'm dropping them from any future roles. And I'm pretty sure they've already done that as well. So again, when you see this, it's not good. It really isn't. It's not good to see this at all. I mean, at the end of the day, they is just an attention seeker. I feel like they is an attention seeking whore who wants any, if not all sort of attention that goes their way. So, I mean, Ezra Miller is a crazy person. I mean, this person is batshit crazy, like, honestly. But it is fun to really poke at. I mean, it really is. I'm not going to lie. Whenever Ezra Miller trends on Twitter, it's like, it gives me a brief moment of happiness. I've never played the lottery. Like, I've never played any scratch tickets or whatnot. But I feel like the moment, the anticipation of maybe winning, I feel like looking at Ezra Miller's name on Twitter, seeing their name trend on Twitter, matches the feeling of the idea of potentially winning a scratch ticket or winning the lottery. Like, that brief moment where it could be something awesome happening is what I feel when I see their name trending on Twitter. Because if you've been on Twitter for the past month or so, you know his name trends on Twitter at least once or twice a week, and it's something new happening. You see their name trending on Twitter once or twice a week, and you know something crazy is about to happen, or something crazy happened to them. It may be them going after the police. It may be them trying to do physical assault on some women, some innocent woman. It might be something like that. You know, that's how crazy it is. It's been a crazy month or so for Ezra Miller. I'm enamored by it. I really am. I kind of think it's kind of hilarious. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of hilarious to see this play out. Obviously, it's not ideal. You know, I mean, I feel bad for the women. I feel bad for the mother. I feel bad for the children that are part of this. You know, it's not a good situation to be with Ezra Miller, of all people. I would not trust him with anything. I wouldn't even trust him with a pet, honestly. I would see Ezra Miller doing some pretty bad things to a pet if you allow that pet to be near Ezra Miller. I don't know what it would be. I mean, but it wouldn't be good. So Ezra Miller allegedly housing three children, I think it's kind of sad. I'm not going to lie. I mean, a Hollywood actor should not be doing this at all, especially a person that was once promising. I mean, Ezra Miller was a once promising actor. I mean, I thought he would be, I mean, a few years ago, and when I say a few years ago, I thought like 2012, 2013, 2014, I thought they would be in a position that Tom Holland is in right now. I thought they would be in the position that Timothy Chalamet was in right now. I mean, I kind of thought Ezra Miller was going to be what Timothy Chalamet is currently at this moment in time. You know, Ezra Miller had that potential to be one of Hollywood's biggest stars, and I say that with a laugh at the end of it, but I really do think that Ezra Miller was going to be one of those individuals that was going to break out. I mean, they wasn't the best actor. I mean, they wasn't. I'm not going to lie. They wasn't the best actor. They never really, I never really saw them steal the show at any movie, but they were able to adequately play themselves in a movie, and I thought they would be cool. I mean, not cool, but I thought it would be serviceable. Cool. The last word I'm ever going to associate Ezra Miller with is cool. But anyways, those are my thoughts on the Ezra Miller situation. Hopefully they get behind bars because this is not good. And I think that's where I'll sort of leave it off at that with that story. Not ideal. I feel more bad for the women, for the mother, and for those three children that are in that position, because again, she's 25 and she has three children. I mean, she's seen some bad stuff. I'm 23, and the idea of me having a child is crazy to me at this moment in time. Maybe it might change in the next few years or so, I don't know, but at this moment in time, having a child, I mean, let alone have three, I mean, that's just bananas. So she's seen some wild stuff. I don't know if... All right, let's get into the next topic here before I put myself in a mental pretzel. All right, so let's get into the next bit of discussion here. So the BET Awards happened yesterday, and it was pretty cringe, I'm not going to lie. So the BET Awards happened yesterday. There are some performances. I saw Chance the Rapper and Joey Badass perform. I saw Chloe perform. If you guys don't know Chloe, she's like Chloe and Haley, I think, are like this R&B group. But I saw Chance and Joey Badass perform. The first question I want to ask is, what happened to Chance the Rapper? Like, I used to like Chance the Rapper. I liked Acid Rap. I thought the appearances that he would have on Donald Glover's or Childish Gambino's projects were quite fun and enjoyable. I thought he was like this happy-go-lucky guy that, you know, even though he liked God and he would often bring God up in his music, and I'm a religious person as well, so I kind of understood where he was coming from, and I kind of liked his music. I'm not going to lie, I thought, you know, that Coloring Book album was quite decent. It wasn't my favorite album of all time, but I thought it was a quite decent album. I enjoyed what he was, but after seeing The Big Day and hearing that album, his first full-length album, and then hearing his music lately, what has been happening to Chance the Rapper? Like, was he always this cringe? Was he always this dude that was this cringeworthy? Because I listened to Hot Shower. Like, I remember listening to The Big Day, the album, on release day when it first came out, and I saw Twitter light it up. I saw, like, Reddit, you know, the message boards on Reddit light it up. I saw Twitter light it up. I saw individuals, like crapping on this album, on that album. And when I listened to it, before listening to it, I'm like, it can't be this bad. And, like, my original thoughts were like, okay, it's Chance the Rapper. It can't be this bad. And then you listen to the album, and it's just as bad, if not worse, than what people were saying about it. I mean, Big Shower is one of the worst songs I've ever heard. And I've listened to some pretty bad songs in my lifetime. I really have. You know, at one point, I enjoyed MGK. So I'm not the best at making decisions when it comes to music. So I've heard some pretty bad songs. But Hot Shower is one of the worst songs I've ever had to endure. And I listened to Currents on the Drake Honestly Nevermind album. And I would much rather listen to Drake's Currents over Chance the Rapper's Hot Shower. That's how bad Hot Shower was for my eardrums. But anyways, Chance the Rapper and Joey Badass performed. I like Joey Badass. I think Joey Badass is a good rapper. He's not, you know, I wouldn't say he's Tyler the Creator, or I wouldn't say he's that, like, Lupe Fiasco. I mean, Lupe Fiasco is a great rapper. Tetsuo and Youth, I still listen to that album to this day. It's a great album. Joey Badass, okay, I mean, he's not my favorite rapper, but he does do well, and I actually prefer Joey Badass over Chance the Rapper, and he performed with Chance the Rapper, so Joey Badass did well. Chance the Rapper, I'm not going to lie, his flow was not that great. It wasn't my kind of cup of tea. So that's what happened. That was the performance aspect of it. Kanye was also there. He wore a Hood by Air jacket. You know, he had this full mask on, this black mask with sunglasses and a hat. So I couldn't even see his face. I couldn't see anything about him. But he was there to present Diddy an award. He mentioned how, like, Diddy, like, helped him with his wife situation and whatnot, which is kind of hilarious, I'm not gonna lie. So yeah, I mean, that's what happened with the BET Awards. Jack Harlow also performed, and apparently, like, he performed with Brandy. who is like this chick or this woman, not chick, this woman that Jack Harlow said he had no idea about. And then they did First Class together. And Jack Harlow, I'm not going to lie, I like Jack Harlow. I think Jack Harlow has some pretty good songs. I mean, if you listen to First Class, that was the song that he performed. First Class, I liked it at first, and then after like it being overexposed on the radio, I'm like, okay, this is kind of tapering down. And that's not Jack Harlow's fault. It's just the radio just incessantly playing it and just me hearing it everywhere. And so I get, you know, numb to it. I don't really enjoy it as much as I did the first listen. But I mean, Jack Harlow has some pretty good songs. I mean, that last album, it wasn't the best thing ever. It wasn't the worst thing ever. There's some good songs in that album. I liked Dua Lipa. I mean, Dua Lipa is a great song that Jack Harlow put out. Churchill Downs, I mean, it's not the best song ever, but I mean, there are moments of it that I really enjoy. It does get boring after a while, I'm not going to lie, because the flows and the rhyme schemes are not that great after a few listens. But I'm not going to lie, I mean, that album was not that bad. It wasn't the worst thing ever. I mean, you still have Drake's album. I mean, Drake's album, honestly, never mind, might be one of the worst albums of this year. And I say that with a lot of enjoyment. And I say that as a person that enjoyed Drake's run from like 2010 to like 2015. That run of Drake in the earlier 2010s, where it was like Take Care, that album, If You're Reading This Is Too Late, that run from like Take Care to If You're Reading This Is Too Late, I would say is one of the best runs in hip hop ever. You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to say what is one of the best runs, but I would say that the Death Grips run between Ex-Military to probably the last album that they put out, that's also one of the best runs of hip hop. And I do include Death Grips as hip hop. I am one of those people that do include that. There are a few runs that I enjoy from hip hop, but again, I don't know what happened to Drake. Maybe he needs to go back to talking about what he used to talk about, because this recent string of albums, it's not good. Add the Fantano, bombs, you know, and add the Fantano bombs when you say it, not good. If anybody's editing this, not me though. I'm not going to be the one that's editing this, but it really hasn't been that good. I mean, his last few albums, whether it's Scorpion, whether it's More Life, I mean, Passion Fruit's like the only song from More Life that I really enjoyed. But again, like when you hear Drake's recent run of albums, you know, it's not good. It really hasn't been good. I don't know why I got this from the BET Awards, but when you go back to the BET Awards, I mean, and maybe this is just like, I don't know what it is, but over the weekend, like everybody was just talking about Roe v. Wade, and it wasn't only at the BET Awards, it also was at Glastonbury, which is like this UK festival. So like all these American artists were like talking about how they hate Roe v. Wade. And it's like, this is a British audience, which probably have just as much stringent abortion laws as America does. They probably have worse abortion laws than America. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not that well versed in UK politics. I don't really care about that. But when I saw the amount of American musicians like sort of go to UK and really talk about, you know, Roe v. Wade, it's like, yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I get where you're coming from. But still, I mean, do you think they really get it? Do you think they really get it? But anyways, when I saw the amount of people, Janelle Monáe was obviously one of those individuals at the BET Awards that brought up, you know, the Roe v. Wade situation. Janelle Monáe, by the way, I don't get her. I'll be honest with you, people liked her last album, Archandroid. I thought it was okay. But like people like bring her up as in like the same discussion as say like some other female rappers and female artists, where I'm like, what are you even talking about? Like you like Twitter, like it's just like weird. Like I don't get her. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure she's talented. I mean, she's also an actor as well, so that explains a lot. When you see her bring up Roe v. Wade, it's like, I don't get it. I don't get Janelle Monáe. Like, I don't get her. Maybe, I mean, if somebody wants to leave a comment down below as to who Janelle Monáe is and why she's important, then by all means do. But I'm rather unimpressed by her. Like, people say, like, she's one of the most talented, creative people, not only in, like, music, but also in film. And it's like, you do know that Jamie Foxx is also there, right? Like, you do know that Jamie Foxx is in that position. You do know that, like, Donald Glover, while he is cringe at times, also released Atlanta, which is like one of the best shows ever. You do know that, you know, there are way more accomplished like female artists out there that are occupying in that same position as Janelle Monáe. And like Azealia Banks, I mean, say what you want about her, but I feel like she's way more talented than that of, say, Janelle Monáe. You know, I don't know why I'm crapping on Janelle Monáe, but I just saw her Roe v. Wade speech, and I'm like, this is just, you're just seeking the approval of you know, people that don't really watch the BT Awards. And I don't watch the BT Awards. I mean, don't get me wrong. Do you think I watch the BT Awards? Let's be honest here. Do you think this person, a person that wears a suit and looks the way he does, watches the BT Awards? Probably not. But I watch the highlights of it because I'm like, why not make fun of the absurdity of award shows? That's what should be happening, is making fun of award shows. But when I saw that, you know, when I saw her like give that speech on Roe v. Wade, I'm like, all right, you're taking this way too seriously. You know, just get your award, sit down, enjoy the award show. You should not be making a political statement. Making a political statement on an award show is just as dumb as thinking that, you know, the amount of people in America are fine with Roe v. Wade being overturned. Like, that it is just as dumb as that. Like, nobody wants it. Nobody expects it. They just want to see they just want to have something to gossip at. They're cooler the next day morning. That's all they care about when it comes to award shows. Like, I know, like, you know, Will Smith slapping Chris Rock was bad, but if it's anything that I really want to see, it's just more drama. I'm a messy person and I live for the drama. And if there's any award show that needs drama, it's smaller, minuscule award shows like the BET Awards that, you know, take themselves way too seriously than they have to be. Like, it's one of those award shows where I feel like they should not be taking it that seriously. I really don't, because like when you think of the BET Awards, you think of, oh, like, and this is like for the Black community. I feel like the Black community views is like, we need to take this seriously. We need to do this. We need to do that. Like, people take the BET Awards way too seriously. Like, I feel like that, you know, they're like, we need to support our own people. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, I mean, I get it. I understand where you're coming from, but when people are like, oh, we need to support our own people, it's like, you do realize that BET is owned by like Viacom, right? You do realize that Paramount Global owns BET, the same like house that owns MTV, Comedy Central, CBS, like the same company that owns all those networks. Nickelodeon is also a network that owns BET. So what is this that we need to support our own people? It's like, I don't get it. Like, it's the same company that owns all those other channels. So, I mean, again, at the end of the day, like, you should only view this award show as something to like make fun of. Like, at the end of the day, like, none of these award shows matter. Like Diddy getting a Lifetime Achievement Award means nothing. It's just a piece of metal. Like, I like Diddy. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, the We Ain't Going Nowhere song, the Bad Boys for Life song that Diddy has is a certified bop. It is a great song, but it's not something to be like. Like, if you're a person that's in any sort of art form, and I hate to call like stand-up comedy an art form, but if you're in any form, if you are in an art form, getting a Lifetime Achievement Award should be the last thing you should focus on. The most important thing you should focus on is just putting out good things that can stand the test of time. That's all that really matters. Like, nobody remembers who won the Lifetime Achievement Award in 2003 for the MTV Awards. Nobody remembers that. And nobody should. People should remember you for what you have done, not for some, you know, dumb award that literally 0.001% care about. You know, so like, again, like the BET Awards is hilarious because like people just take it way, way, way too seriously, more seriously than it should be. But anyways, that's sort of my thoughts and opinions on the BET Awards. And yeah. Just weird. Just a weird thing, man. Just a weird thing to really care about, honestly. Like, I think it's kind of hilarious to see people like be up in arms about who won and who didn't win on Twitter and on like social mediums, on social media sites. It's like, nobody should care, like, at all. I would say that about the BTs. I would say that about the Grammys. Like, what should matter is releasing something that has genuine lasting approval from people. And even then, if it's something that's experimental, at least something that people can sit through on multiple listens and find new things to point at and never get tired or restless listening to something. Like, I can listen to, I mean, I can listen to Death Grips, The Money Store on repeat and never get tired of it. And that won zero awards at any award show. You know, I could listen to Pusha T's It's Almost Dry. And because of Kendrick's new album, I feel like it's not going to win a Grammy. You know, like, I can listen to several albums that, you know, despite it not being acknowledged by, you know, by award shows, it still means a lot to me, and it still means a lot for my enjoyable overall listening experience to those albums. So I don't get it. You know, I don't get these award shows at all. I really don't. All right, let's get into our last bit of discussion here. I know I'm sort of over time, ahead of time, or going over time, but I feel like the abortion thing took longer than it had to be, but I feel like there needs to be some sort of nuance. And sort of, I want to flesh my thoughts out in that topic, and I feel like that's like the only time that I could really do it. But anyway, so let's get into our last bit of discussion here. So Stavros Halkias leaves Come Town. I know this is a very sort of small podcast sort of discussion, and I know it's a very big podcast, but I feel like those who know who know. But if you're outside of the podcast New York City comedy scene podcast ecosystem, Come Town is like one of the biggest podcasts there is in the New York City comedy scene. It's what inspired, I think, a lot of people to join Patreon, because once they saw the amount of money that Come Town was making on Patreon, they decided to follow suit. Whether it was Flagrant 2, Tim Dillon, Are You Garbage, you know, the amount of podcasts out there that started Patreon because of the success of Come Town should not go understated. So I feel like Come Town is a very, very important and influential piece in comedy and within podcasting, because it really showed you the importance of, you know, having a well thought out fan base and, you know, really caring about them, even though Come Town really doesn't put that much effort into the podcast. But Stavros Halkias decided to let everyone know that he's leaving Come Town. He put it in his notes app saying, "Want to let everyone know that I'm not a part of Come Town anymore. As much as we joked about hating the fans and the podcast itself, the show changed my life, and I'll always be grateful for it, for that. Thanks to everyone who listened, subscribed, supported the show. It meant a lot. I'm sad and my involvement in the pod is over, but I'm also really excited for the future. I'm working on a couple of things I can't wait to share. Love ya. Thanks for everything." So yeah, that's what happened. Stav left Come Town. And I knew, I had a feeling that Stavros Halkias was going to leave Come Town when I saw Stav hanging out with Hassan Piker and Nick Mullen hanging out with Sam Hyde. When that happened, I'm like, okay, this is not gonna mesh well. I feel like one's gonna break out, the other one's gonna stick with his own base, and that's fine to, you know, for one to break out, one to, you know, stick with his own base. That's what's to be expected. But when I saw that, I'm like, okay, this is not gonna work out. And when I saw Stav on Flagrant 2, which, by the way, pretty funny episode, go check it out. But when I saw Stav on Flagrant 2 not really addressing or mentioning Come Town, I'm like, okay, this is not good. So overall, Stav, he had some memorable moments on Come Town. I'm not gonna lie, I know people dislike Stav because of his laugh and whatnot, but I liked him. I'm not gonna lie, I thought my favorite part of Stavros on Come Town was when he was discussing how stand-up comedians talk about people as civilians. Like, he'll be like, yeah, stand-up comedians will be like, yeah, he's just a civilian. I'm like, and Stav will be like, yeah, well, what does it mean, like, by civilian? Like that he doesn't do stand-up comedy, the most bottom-barrel profession there is? Like, oh my God, he's just a civilian. He's less than us. As if stand-up comedy is something to aspire to. Like, the way that, like, he sort of broke it down and how the three of them broke it down as to how stand-up comedians like take themselves way too seriously. I'm like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like, when stand-up comedians view themselves as modern-day philosophers, that is the most cringiest, most embarrassing thing you could ever say about yourself. If you're a stand-up comedian, the last thing you should ever equate yourself to is being a modern-day philosopher. Because you know what that is an offense to? Modern-day philosophers. Like, I don't, like, the things that stand-up comedians discuss about on stage should not be in the same vein or perspective as Slavoj Žižek, like, at all. Like, we talk about, like, the most banal things ever. Like, I hear people still to this day make jokes about how dating is hard. Like, the most dated trope ever. And comedians are still using that bit or still using that premise and finding ways to make it even more banal and more uninteresting. I still hear jokes about Uber. I still hear jokes about how Spirit Airlines is the worst airline ever. I still hear jokes. I mean, just go down all the common tropes of a stand-up comedian. I hear jokes about that constantly. I hear jokes about people's dick. And it's like, I get it. You know, don't get me wrong. I mean, there is one joke I have about a dick. I do have one dick joke, but that's about it. But there's so many like tropes about stand-up comedy. So when I hear stand-up comedians say that they're the modern day philosophers, I just laugh at that. I'm not going to lie. It's borderline insulting to people that actually like dedicate themselves to modern day philosophy. It really is. So when I see this, when I saw Stav, sort of go away from Cumtown, I wasn't surprised by it. I really wasn't. It kind of weird to see the timing of it because he announced it on Saturday. I feel like nobody in my right mind was on the internet Saturday. Like, I feel like a lot of people just took the weekend off from the internet. I really do think so because not only was the weather good, I mean, I'm in the East Coast, the weather for most people here was pretty good, but still, I mean, the Roe v. Wade thing, I was hesitant to look at people's Instagram stories because I thought every person's Instagram story was going to be about abortion. So overall, taking the weekend off was a lot of people's forte. I did myself. So when I saw this, I'm like, the timing's a little weird to announce it the day after Roe v. Wade. But still, I wish him the best of luck. I mean, obviously, he's a great comedian. Go watch his crowd work. Go watch his last recent special that came out like a few weeks ago. Go check out his new special. I hear it's very funny. I still have to watch it, but go see it if you haven't. It's pretty funny. His crowd work is also pretty good as well. So again, a lot of good things with Stavros Halkias. I'm sure he's going to be successful on it. The fact that he left $40,000 on the table to just do his own thing, I mean, that's kind of baller. I'm not going to lie. So congrats. I mean, you know, good luck to Stavros. He's a very funny comedian. I'll obviously remember him talking about stand-up comedians, discussing regular people as civilians. I'll obviously remember his cackle. Cumtown, between like the years of 2016 to 2019, like there was like a 2 to 3 year period where like Cumtown was just like off the chain funny. And I'm going to miss that. I'm going to really miss that. I don't know how the dynamic will play out with just Nick Mullen and Adam Freeland, but it's going to be interesting. I, for one, can't wait to see it. I really can't. All right. I think that's it for today. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you guys like, subscribe, and click the bell icon for notifications down below. Make sure you subscribe to both my podcast channel and my podcast clips channel. Make sure you leave a comment down below on any of the topics, whether it's Stavros Halkias, the BET Awards, whether it is FDA set to ban Juul, Ezra Miller situation, or whether that's Roe v. Wade. Leave any questions, comments, concerns down in the comment section down below. I'll do my best to respond to each and every one of them. If I feel like it's an okay comment or not that great of a comment, I'll just give a like to it. But anyways, that's all the time I have. Before that, I want to say, make sure you rate and review on the Apple Podcast app. And if you're able to do that on Spotify, that's great as well. And make sure you follow me on my Instagram and Twitter, at OJ Tucker, AJAYTHAKKAR, underscore at the end, for both my Instagram and Twitter. And spread the word through WhatsApp or through text change. I think creating a community here is very, very important. Being able to hear one another out is very, very important. To make it more fun, enjoyable, lighthearted is great and more important. Usually I discuss tennis, so if people are into tennis, then obviously listen to the podcast as well. But I think that's it for today. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you guys on Thursday. I'll obviously be discussing Wimbledon, discussing the Djokovic-Murray match. There's obviously Nadal is playing it tomorrow or today if you're hearing this on Tuesday, which you are. So I'll definitely be on the lookout for those matches. And we'll discuss things that are happening in our political and societal realm as well. So guys, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And I'll see you guys on Thursday. All right, guys. Peace. See y'all.